I've been in touch with a devotee from Europe who is very much attracted by the personality and teachings of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He's in Mayapur now, and he recently sent me a letter telling me how much inspiration he feels by going to the Yoga Pit, the temple at the birthplace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which was first established by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and sitting there in front of the deity of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I sent him some quotes from Srila Prabhupada, in which Srila Prabhupada was expressing much displeasure about that deity of Bhaktivinoda Thakur at the Yoga Pit, which might seem surprising, but Srila Prabhupada said that this was established not by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, but by the devotee who became the institutional acharya at Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the Yoga Pit after the disappearance of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And Srila Prabhupada said, why have they kept him there at the gate like a gatekeeper? Why did they do it when Srila Prabhupada, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur didn't do it? They've become more intelligent than him. And so he was very dismissive and critical of this. So I sent those quotes. And in return, I got a very interesting letter. I'll read quite a lot of that, and then I'll comment on that. This devotee writes to me, regarding your kind references from the Veda base in which Srila Prabhupada exhibited his transcendental dissatisfaction about so-and-so Maharaj and his disciples erecting the temple of Bhaktivinoda Thakur at the gate of the Yogapit and calling them over-intelligent, jumping over Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, humiliating Srila Bhaktivinoda on the level of gatekeeper. He writes, So far I only partially understand it, but I would like to be frank about two following things that I somehow perhaps understand. Please correct me if I am wrong. My first point is, and he states about himself, I also have Rahu in the second house, like Srila Prabhupada. I have a sharp tongue, and I'm mostly misunderstood. I'm not sure if he's saying that Prabhupada also had Rahu in the second house. I don't know about the chart, astronomical chart of Srila. But he seems to say that Srila Prabhupada had a sharp tongue because of this and was misunderstood, and compares himself. For people of my kind, there is a saying, whatever you build with your hands, you destroy with your tongue. Interesting saying. I didn't hear it before. I do not compare myself with Srila Prabhupada's Varni and Vapu, but having some similar nature that made me attracted to Srila Prabhupada in the first place until now, I presume, that the mentioned references are rhetorical statements, and that Srila Prabhupada's grudge against that devotee, as sometimes expressed in front of his own disciples, Prabhupada's own disciples, was not absolute tattva, but his personal sentiment of disappointment, for he was thinking big. I am convinced that technically Srila Prabhupada is right in a sense that his reasoning and missiology is far superior than that of his godbrothers, but there is also another point of the coin. Like in Dwadash Mandir at Biranaga, that's the birthplace of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. There's a temple there, Dwadash Mandir, 12 temples. And that's being run on by son, or the disciples of the son of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, whose name was Lalit Prasad Thakur. And this Lalit Prasad Thakur had what Srila Prabhupada called a transcendental difference with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. They had very different visions of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted to preach very widely. There was at one point a proposal from Srila Prabhupada. He went there that they would develop the place, but eventually that proposal was dropped. And the present position of the Dwadash Mandir. So I'm told, I only went there once many years ago, is that it's crumbling and in poor condition physically. So there, our correspondents write, they say, if ISKCON were to take over, things would be even worse. There would be a well-known money consciousness, a big guest house full of prostitutes and karmis, and their pristine 19th century Bhajanandi mood would be forever spoiled, like what they did with Bhakti Kuti at Puri, an ISKCON brothel, they call it now. When I once revealed similar critical observations of others to a certain Swami who resides in Mayapur in ISKCON, he was very upset, and he ascribed that he told me that if he was younger, he would throw me out of the window and that my tongue should be cut off, etc. But I hope that you, Maharaj, addressing me, understand me, that my research is not just apologetic to whatever ISKCON's party spirit, he's an ISKCON devotee, but that I critically observe all kinds of opinions in order to try to balance them, but not necessarily fully subscribe to such outlooks. I try to be a kind of ethnographic researcher in these things in order to try to go deeper. My second point regarding the Yogapeeth is, I also have my experiences with the Bhaktivinoda Thakur Murthy at the Yogapeeth, and I'm very grateful that he is not only at Godrum, the deity of Bhaktivinoda Thakur was installed by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur at Godrum, just over the river Jalangi Saraswati from Mayapur, at his Bhajankuti, at the Swananda Sukhada Kunja, his second Bhajankuti there. He first was at Surabhi Kunj, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I'm very grateful that he's not only at Godrum, but also at Yogapeeth, just a mile from where I stay at Gauranaga, so that I can visit him easily. Perhaps that is my illusion, and I am, in the following, humbly submitting another consideration to your grace for your judgment and advice. In February of 2003, I suddenly became attracted to that deity. I've just completed the Bhakti Shastri. I had just completed the Bhakti Shastri course then, but I never thought to claim second initiation on the basis of that. But then in front of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Murthy, I got an ardent idea. I must claim the second initiation, and then I did it. The language is a little strange, so when he says claiming, that might sound a little strange, but remember, English is not his first language. He's also not my initiated disciple, by the way. Especially from December of 2016, when I'm in Mayapur, that means just a year practically, I go to see that deity daily. In thus 7 months so far, 3 visits to Mayapur, I have spent 1,000 plus hours in front of that Murti, and I have an ever fresh sensation that Srila Bhaktivinoda is personally present. I feel that each and every time I'm taking a kind of sunbath in front of him, I see emanating a kind of effulgence from the Murti, and I have a magnetic attraction to visit it daily, him daily. In fact, I'm happy that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is a gatekeeper, so every day I spend some time with him first to get prepared at the gate where there is peace for the Gaur Arati and Darshans in front of other Yogapeeth deities in proper consciousness. I don't associate with the devotees there. I'm trying to regulate my mind and intelligence with the faith of being attracted by Bhaktivinoda Thakur and the Yogapeeth itself, somehow being granted some kind of entry by the gatekeeper, independent of their routines. In 1999 in South India, I was shivering, crying at a certain sweet melodious arati. Then another devotee told me, that is a Sai Baba Kirtan. I immediately accepted forever since. My feelings were wrong, just material sentiments and nothing more, like some people cry by seeing a romantic materialistic movie. Perhaps I'm wrong about my attraction to the gatekeeper and Jogapit, and my process of research and writing about Bhaktivinoda Thakur should be independent of cultivating that experience. I am Anitya Baddha, prone to continuous, never-ending illusions and mistakes. Then, please advise and instruct me, and I will try my best to reconcile it. Last week I was in three days in depression about something, feeling bodily disorders and mental sufferings to digest that things are as they are, and I am not the enjoyer, controller, and benefactor. Being only an instrument in the glorification of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, kindly suggest me how my feelings and intelligence should be adjusted and regulated in this case to become a better recipient and medium of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's grace. So yes, interesting points here. Let's go through it. Having read what Srila Prabhupada said about the deity of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when I go to the Jogapit, I offer my obeisance, or sometimes I just fold my hands from outside, because if Srila Prabhupada felt so strongly that it was insulting to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, then I, as a follower of Srila Prabhupada, don't want to override that or try to access Bhaktivinoda Thakur's mercy in a way that Srila Prabhupada would not approve. He did approve of devotees going for darshan at Godrum on the other side, at Swananda Sukhada Kunja. That's my personal attitude toward that. Regarding Srila Prabhupada's feelings towards his godbrothers, it was mixed. Mostly we hear about his deep disappointment, and sometimes he found that some of his godbrothers are actually conspiring against him to stop getting land, and he said they're envious and this and that. But then there are other quotes where he says, no, they're all devotees, they're all great souls, and yeah, the tick-ticky ticked at that point. So yeah, I subscribe to the lizard ticked, which is supposed to be that confirms what you said. You say in Telugu also, it's a pan-India thing. I learned it in Bengal. I say, hey, no. I actually first heard that from Jagataka Maharaj. Many things I learned from him. I feel the same way, that whatever happened in the past, it was very heavy, but from our perspective, we should see they're all great devotees, and whatever it happened in the past is in the past, and no doubt they're all back to Godhead now with Krishna. So I feel the same way. I don't want to criticize Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers. Similarly, at the Dwadash Mandir, the followers of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they don't want to ruin the pristine attitude, the pristine atmosphere for their bhajan. But then we should think that Bhaktivinoda Thakur should be glorified widely all over the world. And so if it was developed as Mayapur has been developed, then so many people would come and Bhaktivinoda Thakur would be appreciated more. Why keep it to a few people? The mood of Bhaktivinoda himself was one of spreading Krishna consciousness. He very much wanted that. He wanted that devotees would come from all over the world to Mayapur especially. He himself, apart from being a prolific author, he was also an outgoing preacher in the city of Calcutta and also in the villages. He also gave many instructions for bhajan, bhajare bhajare amar manati manda bhaj, bhaja braja bane radha krishna charanaravinda bhajan bina gati naire, for instance. He sings to his own mind to worship Radha and Krishna, the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan. There's no other way to achieve the destination of. he gave many instructions for Nama Bhajan. So if devotees want to maintain a pristine life like that, well, that's nice for them, but considering the benefit of the whole world, better to have it developed so that many people come. Now, they have noted that they don't want to make it like ISKCON, and they're very critical with money consciousness, will turn it into a brothel with prostitution, and they're very critical of what's happened at the Bhakti Kuti, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Bhajan Kuti, his place of Bhajan, in Puri, which was taken over by ISKCON, and the ground floor is a restaurant. It's more or less, yeah, so many people come to Puri and they go there for a restaurant. And then on the floor above the ground floor, there's a temple with a deity of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Radha Krishna. And that has become very much criticized by the many Gauriya Mats there in Puri and in Bengal. And seems at the at Birnagar also, the place of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's birth, has become very criticized why they've turned that into a restaurant. And I feel the same way. I spoke with the devotee who had taken the great trouble to get that land and develop it, and said, well, how do you maintain it otherwise? ISKCON as an organization should be, it's a small place, should be able to maintain it. Anyway, that's another issue. I hope that as soon as possible that can be, the restaurant can be closed, because it gives ISKCON a very bad image there of being very commercial. Why did they turn Bhaktivinoda Thakur's place into a restaurant? So yeah, they have some grounds for concern. There are some rumors, and it's quite possibly there's some truth in it, that the ISKCON guest house, I'm not sure in Mayapur, maybe in other places, sometimes there's some prostitution or something like that. And it's quite possible, if you have a big guest house, that some illicit activities may go on, and that should be checked. But on the other hand, if you see in Mayapur, so many lakhs and lakhs of people are coming from India and from all over the world and getting inspiration in Krishna consciousness. So to see only the faults, I mean, not saying there are no faults in what happens in ISKCON, because sava rambahido shena, in this world, Krishna says, whatever you attempt to do, there will be some fault there. But it's not as if ISKCON is deliberately trying to become very commercial and promote prostitution. That's a really imbalanced perspective. Yeah, if you're going to have a big center with lots of people coming, many materialistic people coming, then yeah, there'll be some, the atmosphere won't be as pristine and as if you just have a few Babaji's chanting. But when they come, they'll get, and they do, they get spiritual inspiration. So I find that on one hand, if there is grounds to criticize ISKCON in this way, then ISKCON should have a look at itself and try to improve. Also, a few years ago, it came out that there was some journalist from Australia came and visited Navadvip and Mayapur, and he found Mayapur ISKCON, he found it completely neutral person, found it quite commercial, especially compared to the temples in Navadvip. And again, not so many people go in Navadvip as they, well, it's difficult to say, but Mayapur is definitely, I would say many more people go nowadays into Navadvip. So there are pros and cons. ISKCON, we should clean up our act. We always have to be vigilant. It's not that if you have a pristine atmosphere that everything will automatically be very pure. It's quite possible that there'll be some illicit activities in such places. Also, if you increase the scale of activities, then the scale of illicit activities is also likely to increase. So that's one thing. Then he says, I have Rahu in the second house like Srila Prabhupada. I don't compare myself with Prabhupada's. We should be careful about that. If we think, well, Prabhupada was like that, and I'm like that. Prabhupada had this tendency, and I have also, to be very sharp in speaking. It's not a good comparison to make, because Srila Prabhupada, you can see what Prabhupada has in his chart, but it's not the astrological chart of Srila Prabhupada is not that of a materialistic person. What we have in our chart is an indication of the present psychological makeup we have according to our previous activities in the modes of material nature. The pure devotee's chart, like that of the Supreme Lord, reflects his transcendental character. He's not at all under the modes of nature. It should be understood. We shouldn't think that the chart of a pure devotee indicates this. There may be some good or bad qualities according to his previous karma. To think like that is offensive. So we should be very careful in comparing ourselves with Srila Prabhupada or any pure devotee. We should, some comparison we should see, because we're supposed to emulate their behavior, but that means we should follow and not imitate. And if due to our previous bad karmas we have some tendency to speak very roughly, for instance, then we also shouldn't just say, oh, it's my karma, or it's in my chart, or something like that. No, we have to improve. We have to make the effort to improve. Not that we just say, oh, it's my karma. But by chanting Hare Krishna, we should become purified. As far as the ecstasies that a devotee may experience, well, can be a great gift, or it can be a great illusion also, because Srila Prabhupada writes in one of his Bhagavad Gita purports that the affective, it means emotional hallucinations, he refers to, of that some people take as being spiritual realization. So we should be very careful of that. Yeah. And also we should see that how real is our ecstasy? Well, we should see also how much we're being purified of the bad tendencies that we have. If we have some ecstasy, but then we go on with our sharp speech that is not coming from the spiritual platform as Srila Prabhupada did, to vidyate hridaya granthish, to cut the knots of illusion within the heart, but it may be rather than being for the purpose of cutting. Sandha evasya chindanti manovya sangam hiyukti bihi. In Bhagavat, Lord Krishna states that the sadhus, they speak with a sharp tongue to break the, to cut the material attachments, the mental attachments. So when Srila Prabhupada speaks sharply, that's for cutting our material attachments. And when we speak sharply, if we're not consciously following Srila Prabhupada, in many cases it may be just an expression of our own ego, not for cutting others' ego. So how much that ecstasy is real? Of course, there's no way to measure that materially. Someone may get the mercy of Bhaktivinoda Thakur or any previous acharya. That's their mercy, that they feel inspired in that way. There's also Bhakta Demian is inspired by Srila Baladev Vidyabhushan, is doing tremendous service in researching and finding old manuscripts and translating and publishing the works of Baladev Vidyabhushan. And this devotee is also doing research into Bhaktivinoda Thakur, his teachings, his life, and so many things. So that's, we can't discount that. That's a great gift to, and especially to be inspired by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, as this devotee is doing. He wants to present him in a devotional manner, because there are others who have researched on Bhaktivinoda Thakur and done their PhDs and written a bunch of nonsense, actually, just nonsense things. And they may have brought out some good points also, but if they see with the psychologist, anthropologist light, they don't see him as a sacred personality, and therefore their research on him is all offensive. But this devotee is doing so in a devotional way. So the fact that you have this service to him, you're not just enjoying the ecstasy, so to speak. You can take that as Bhaktivinoda Thakur's mercy, but we'll understand that that is mature. That mercy is becoming mature in your heart when you actually become purified. Bishoy charya kobe shuddha hobe mon tobe hamaherabo Sri Vrindavan. Our actual experience of seeing Vrindavan and the personalities of Vrindavan, like Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that will be that will actually manifest when we become free of material desires in the heart. Now, another point relevant to this is that, we see the godbrothers of Srila Prabhupada, Goyamart. We can take a very critical attitude, or we can take an attitude that they're all serving the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in different ways. Srila Prabhupada also saw like that, as well as being very critical. And it's probably most healthy for us to see like that, even though we may have, up to the present day, what we could call political or institutional disagreements with various devotees in the Gauriya Math, as we have institutional and organizational agreements even within our own ISKCON, as they have within the Gauriya Math. And the followers of Bhaktivinoda Thakur at Birnagar, their approach is very different. More of a bhajanānandi approach to Krishna consciousness than the goshtyānandi approach which Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur promoted. And we can see that everyone is serving Krishna in various ways. So that's a broad-minded way to see it. But we have to be careful with that also, because it's not that anyone can imagine any way of serving Krishna. How far do you take this idea that everyone's serving Krishna in their own way, and anyone who's serving, it's okay, it's fine. Well, there are what Bhaktivinoda Thakur called, and he quoted one Tota Babaji in this regard, upper sampradayas who claim to be following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. For instance, the Gaura Nagari Sampradaya, they say that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the enjoyer of the girls of Nadia, as Krishna was the enjoyer of the damsels of Raja. It's Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati very strongly rejected this as being bogus. This is not the proper way. This is not service to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is disservice. So that's just one example. So the idea, well, everyone's following, they're serving Krishna in their own way, that helps to keep peace in Vaishnava society, and maybe our mind won't be so disturbed. But we have to see, there is also such a thing as deviation. There are specific instructions of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There are specific instructions of our own Srila Prabhupada, even with our own, within our own ISKCON. For instance, there are instructions which Srila Prabhupada gave about the Gurukul in Vrindavan, and he specifically founded it to be different from a mundane school. But at the present time, there is a, well, it's already practically converted into a mundane school, apart from the fact that it's in Vrindavan and there's a whole new campus being made. And should we just say, well, everyone's serving Prabhupada in the way that they feel inspired within their heart? Yeah, but what about Prabhupada's direct instructions? You may have an inspiration within the heart, but if that goes clearly against Prabhupada's desires and instructions, as he himself said and is well recorded, then what is this inspiration within the heart? So we should be very careful about this and see what are Srila Prabhupada's instructions and stick to that. And if we have some inspiration to do something different, then we should understand that this inspiration isn't coming from Srila Prabhupada. It's we may think it's service, yeah, but service that is against the specific instructions of Srila Prabhupada, that becomes a deviation. There is such a thing as deviation, and just to say that everyone's serving Krishna might be very nice to say like that, but that means our movement is it's in a very dangerous situation. If we accept that everyone can serve in their own way without specifically referring to Srila Prabhupada's desires and instructions. So just as we should be vigilant and not allow ISKCON's name, which means Srila Prabhupada's name, to become tarnished by accusations of our guest houses being brothels, I'm pretty sure that's a gross exaggeration. There may be some cases of someone being bringing a prostitute, but it's not being run specifically like that. And if it were, I mean, however anyone might think the leadership is corrupt, but I don't think that they're that corrupt that they're going to deliberately run a brothel. That's really, really an over the top, extreme accusation. But anyway, just as we should be vigilant to that such things aren't allowed to happen, we should also be vigilant to understand what Srila Prabhupada wanted and stick to that closely. And then comes the question, well, what about innovation? Yeah, that's also there. The question can sometimes be, can sometimes, it can be a fine line. That's also true. But it's also not true that anything and anything we do in the name of Srila Prabhupada is what he wanted. So in this regard, I'm compiling a book called The Mood and Mission of Srila Prabhupada, in which I'm compiling many of Srila Prabhupada's instructions on what he actually wanted of ISKCON. So we should be careful that this idea that, well, everyone's just following in their own way, I'm very afraid of this, because it's, maybe I say it more openly, but there are many, many of my God brothers who see what to them is plain as day, that there are serious deviations going on in ISKCON. So I said it again. This should be addressed, and not just, well, it's all transcendental. If Srila Prabhupada's not pleased, then what's the use? Even if we think he's pleased, just like someone may think, I'm getting so much mercy from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I'm feeling such ecstasy in the kirtan, and then so it's a Sai Baba kirtan. And what ecstasy is that? That's the shadow ecstasy. What is that? There's Chaya Ratyabhas and Pratibimba Ratyabhas. Is the technical terms described by Rupa Goswami way back at the beginning of our Sampradaya in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that something which appears to be bhakti, but is not actually. There's the shadow and the reflection, different kinds of what we think. We may think it's pure feelings, but it's not. So there's some thoughts. Let me just have a quick look. See if there's anything more. I'm sure there's plenty more to say, but yeah. Okay, I'll finish that. Hare Krishna. Vancha kalpa thuru bhyas chakri bahasin hubhya evacha patitanam pavade bhyo vaishnave bhyo namo namaha.